light ones, the non-militants.
That's right. Yeah. what you say? She was a pioneer typist. You say, I think you say she was one of the early lady typewriters trained at Pittman's.
Is that what they used to call
College?
Them?
Yes.
Well, you see, this is going back a long way. I never knew my maternal grandfather, but he had three sons, and they went to away to boarding school. It's one of the Catholic public schools, Cotton. I don't think it's on the public schools list now.
I know, I've heard of it, yes. Yeah. Yes.
And make sure his daughter, the only one, had an equally good chance of education. He thought the world might change. About 12 years old, she, with two of her friends, was shot over to the continent to a convent there, not at Kidderminster or Stourbridge, where they came from. And she finished her education there because he said she must learn a foreign language, and French they had to learn. And I think he died when she was about 16. Well, most children then, their education finished at 16, and she was at home then. But then she spent until she was 21, I think. Yes, until she was 21 and came into some money. You couldn't inherit before 21 then. And she spent the 5 years, I think, either at home or in the office of her cousin, who was a solicitor. He was a well-known solicitor in the Midlands. He left an awful lot of money, and she helped him in his office and did a lot of work by hand in lovely copperplate handwriting. And when she came into money, it was away to London, where her elder brother, who was in the business, found her respectable lodgings in a Catholic family, and she went to Pittman's Metropolitan School.
Could I ask you what her name was?
James. Beatrice James.
Beatrice James, I see, yes.
Martha Beatrice James, exactly.
Yes.
And after a year there, when she'd qualified bookkeeping, shorthand and typing, she went out to business in London, in a solicitor's office. She'd got that background.
So her family had enabled her to get into that world, really,
yeah, because she'd been with George James.
Yes.
And I suppose it paid her something, because he was handling the estate. Actually, he handled the estate for that family, and my grandfather was the youngest of 12. And he did all that family for nothing, and yet he made a fortune.
Did he? So anyway, that got her launched in London as a typist,
yes,
and
yes.
Then she earned her own living, did she, or kept herself?
Well, she earned her own living. I mean, her mother was a widow. The boys were growing up, and eventually they commenced work. The middle one became an engineer, although they wanted him to go into the priesthood, but he hadn't got the vocation. And the younger one ended up eventually an officer in the Mounties in Canada.
Do you really? I see. Mm-hmm. So did they all live together in London then, or,
no.
Or she was just by herself in lodgings or something?
No, she was in lodgings in somewhere off the Harrow Road with a respectable Irish Catholic family.
I see, yes, yes.
Found by the eldest son,
yes.
Who, having been in the business, was, I think, was good at hide, skins and wool classing. They were in that kind of business.
Yes.
They were ordinary middle-class people.
So then, while she was there, she joined the NWSS?
No. That was before she was married.
I see.
She married, and then a reversal of fortunes, she had to work as well. And I think it was when I was a schoolgirl she joined the suffragists. I think it was about half a crown a year, which was a sacrifice. Someone persuaded her to join, but I don't know what she did, because they didn't do very much, you see.
No,
it was the other ones
who
made the running.
Yes, of course, yes. But where was she living then? I mean, she married after she'd been a typist. She got married, did she, in London somewhere?
No, she got married. She actually got married in Newmarket.
I see, to somebody called Sarbutz.
Yes.
Yes. I am pronouncing it right, am I?
Yes, that's right, yes.
And then she joined the NUWSS after that.
Yes, we were schoolgirls. We were grown up almost, not quite grown up.
Mm.
It was about, about 1909, 10, 11,
yes,
something like that.
Mm. Yes, yes. So why do you think she joined? I mean, what?
Well, I mean, anybody who worked like she did, she came in contact with people who persuaded her. She was out always working in London as a secretary, you see, and then she became aware that women had rights. Well, she worked all her life.
But she married in Newmarket then,
mm-hmm.
But did she go back to London after she'd married then?
Yes, we all came back, because the reversal in fortunes, they had to come to London.
I see.
Bringing my sister and I, my brother was born later, and we lived in London.
I see. Your father, what was your father?
My father was in racing. He was a turf reporter.
Was he really? Was he? That's a very interesting life, actually.
Except he made no money. In fact, he it was an unsuccessful life. You get people like that.
So your mother had to carry on working then?
Oh, my mother carried on, yes. She carried on. You couldn't stop her eventually. There was a time when she needn't have worked so hard because we were grown up. But she didn't like being at home. She preferred to go out when she could.
Yes, I see. That's so. And what did she do then, Miss Alva? Did she had a typing job all the time then?
She had a secretarial job all the time and a typewriter at home for any spare time typing. She worked, well, when I went out to business, she was with the AA. It was in its early days. And Stenson Cook was the big man there, an insufferable snob. And he said, well, don't let your daughter go out to anyone else. We'll have her here. So my sister and I went there to start our careers.
Yes. So did she, I mean, you say she met a lot of people who were in the suburbs. Where did she meet them then? At work?
She met at work so much. I think it was contacts and friends she made outside. She was a person who made a lot of friends. I think, I can't think who she knew in the suffragettes. It could have been some of her Jewish friends. She was very keen on Jews.
Was she really? Why was that?
Well, to start off with, she was very tolerant, and she was educated abroad, and she liked foreigners, and she definitely admired Jews.
Did she? That's interesting.
Because of their brains, I think, considerably.
Yeah.
And also because she thought they always looked after their own. She had lots and lots of Jewish friends, because I met them when I was young. And I think it's probably some of those, the Wexlers, for example, who got her interested in the suffragists, but not the militants.
Because I've often thought that the suffrage movement is very attracts a lot of Jews, actually. There are a lot of Jews quite active in it, and I wondered why. And I suppose it is partly that they're intelligent people.
Probably. And then, as she said, she thought that she was always interested in Jews because she also came from a minority, because it was a Catholic family. But they weren't Irish, they were English, you see, and they were, at that time, a minority.
The James family,
yes.
I mean, to
be English and a Catholic at that time, you were in a minority, weren't you?
Of course.
In fact, it wasn't very long since the Catholic Emancipation Act, was it?
1829.
I mean, I'm not a Catholic, I wasn't brought up as one. But she said that was the reason. She belonged to a minority, and this is why in London she liked foreigners. And she mixed with Jews. She liked them because they were brainy.
Where did you actually live in London when you went back from Newmarket?
I was born in Newmarket. We went to, we were all over the place, Bloomsbury for a time, living anywhere till we got a settled place. Bloomsbury, right in London, Camden Town, and eventually moved out to Hornsey when we got a house. And of course, in latter years, I mean, we moved right away from there. I went near Hadley Woods.
Oh, yes, yes. Do you feel she sympathised with the suffragist movement because of her own personal experience a bit? I mean, as a typist or as a housewife or whatever?
I don't think she got a chip on her shoulder at all about that. I think the way she was brought up, her father thought that the time was coming when women had to take their place in the world, and they must have an education as good as the sons. This is where it springs from, I think.
Yes. Tell me about her father then. I mean, where did he get these ideas from?
No idea. He was the youngest of 12. And his father, oddly enough, he had these 12 children. He had some private means. He needed them with 12. But he worked for somebody else. He was the general manager and everything for a tannery. And
this is your mother's father or your mother's father's father?
My mother's grandfather.
Yes.
And when the family was all sort of settled, he decided he'd go into business for himself. And I'm really not clear whether he bought out his employer or started on his own. But he did have a tannery. And the two youngest sons, my grandfather being the youngest, inherited and ran this tannery.
I see.
And they had a house, eventually two houses in the town, I think it was Kidderminster, and one house at the tannery where there were several of his sisters who weren't married, and they lived there with a horrible smell, because any disobedience, when the boys came home from school, they were banished to the aunts at the tannery. That's all I can tell you about that, because I never knew my grandfather.
No, of course not.
He died in 1450.
Yes. So anyway, he had rather enlightened ideas about opposition.
I don't know where he got them from, but he had these enlightened ideas, yes.
Yes. What about your mother's mother? I mean, did she have...
Oh, well, she was an only child. I'm telling you all this, I've got this in my 500 pages here. Mm. My maternal grandmother, she was sent to, I don't know where she went to school, but she was in London, she went to a famous domestic science place. It was called Mrs. Marshall's School of Cookery. There was none of your best domestic science then. And it was the equivalent of Eastbourne College of Domestic Science, or the one in Edinburgh, Athol Crescent, or the other one in London, the name eludes me.
Mm.
Only they didn't call it domestic science, they called it cookery and household management.
Yes.
And it equipped them then to not only cook and run a house of servants, what it didn't equip them for was getting down on the hands and knees and scrubbing.
Yes, it gave them the theory, if not the practice.
Well, it gave them the practice on the cooking, yes. The cooking, yes, because she was a superlative cook.
Mm.
It was the equivalent of Eastbourne College of Domestic Science. It was going until... I think it faded out in the 1950s only.
Mm.
We're still going. Mm.
So your mother's mother was a very competent woman, was
very
she?
Very competent, but
yes. Yes, yes, I see.
Is she very competent, yes.
Because it is most interesting, this what did your mother do in her spare time then, when she was mixing with these people?
Time.
I mean, you say she met these people out of working hours, sort of thing. I mean, on what sort of occasion?
Well, she'd meet them in the lunchtime. She'd friends. She used to go to lunch with. She'd meet them in the evenings sometimes. But she didn't have all that much spare time. She had a lot of interesting friends. She was artists. There was a friend of hers, a Blompier, the Jersey artist, and his wife, who was Dutch Jewish, Van Abbe, and her brother. They were her friends. I met them all. In fact, I have a painting there, a watercolour, of my mother when young, done by Van Abbe.
Yes,
she met a lot of interesting people. She didn't have a lot of time.
Yes.
People say, what did you do for hobbies? One didn't have hobbies. Mm. I mean, you worked... Before the First World War, it was 9 to 7 in offices, and Saturdays.
Because
when we were little, she used to get home just as we were finishing our homework.
Your father had a job still as a turf reporter, did he?
He had at that time, but he didn't afterwards.
Mm.
And he was in and out of this and doing bits on his own, and was usually in when we came home from school. There were no school meals.
Mm.
It's a very different world. You didn't have married women working so much then in offices.
No, of course.
It was very unusual.
It was very unusual,
very unusual,
absolutely,
yeah.
Yes.
By the time I went to business, they were coming into offices. But in my mother's early days, it wasn't usual. She always used her maiden name.
Because it was slur on her husband, in a way, was it? If
no,
she
not
worked.
That. But they didn't use their married names as they went out to work. They used their maiden name.
Because
I remember at one time, about 15, she sent me with a message, and she'd done some typing for Sir Sidney Lowe. You wouldn't remember.
Oh, yes, I know the name. He's a legal historian, really, or a constitutional lawyer.
A long time ago, this was.
Yes,
when I was 15, because his daughter, not his daughter, his niece, married Molotov.
Mm-hmm.
Forget her first name,
mm-hmm.
Sylvia Lowe or something like that.
Yes,
she married Molotov.
Mm.
And was sent there to deliver this typing. And he said, "Who are you, little girl? 15, you know, fancy calling anybody 15, little girl, today."
Mm.
Oh, I said, "I'm Miss James's daughter," having dropped a big brick. He didn't know she was married. Next time he saw her, he said, "I see you're wearing the badge of bondage. I hadn't noticed it." You see, you're very, very different.
If you were married then, people would have been tempted to sack you, would they? Or
no, they wouldn't have been tempted to sack you for doing a good job. But in the civil service, they had a grade then called women clerks. And when you got married, you had to leave, and they gave you a handsome gratuity. you wouldn't have been allowed to stay teaching, I think, at that time, if you were married and had a husband, not unless you were a widow. I don't remember one married teacher at all.
So your mother kept it quiet that she was married. Well, no, she didn't, because she had a wedding ring.
She had to keep
on.
It quiet, but she used her own name.
Yes,
which was easier for other people, because ours was sometimes difficult. You had to spell it out. You do have to now sometimes.
Yes, I see. So what I'm really wondering, you see, is whether there is any connection between her being an early typist and being a suffragette or suffragist. Do you think there is any connection, really? Or is it really her friends, her out of work?
I would say it was the natural thing, that the way she was brought up and the people she met and the fact that she had to be out at business all the time. It came from that.
A combination of all those things.
Because she wouldn't have wanted to be a suffragette if she'd been at home and not going out to business.
No.
You see, people who stayed at home and did nothing except their housework and whatnot in those days, they didn't take up very much in the way of extra hobbies or anything.
No.
I mean, that is why eventually you got the Townswomen's Guild formed, to get women who were staying at home out and getting interested in other things.
Why do you think she didn't become a suffragette?
She didn't like militancy at all.
Didn't she?
Oh, no, she wouldn't have done that. I don't think I would have done, really. I don't think I would like it today, although I think if they hadn't been militant, if there hadn't been a general nuisance, they mightn't have got their way in the end. Although, in the end, they got the vote, not by Mrs. Pankhurst, because of the work the women did in the First World War.
Mm.
But the suffragists and the suffragettes brought that to the attention of the powers that be, who laughed. They thought it was really funny. And Winston Churchill did.
Yes, you mentioned your letter, actually. I was very interested in this. You said... tell me about men's attitudes to woman suffrage.
Well, they thought it was a frivolous thing. They thought that women should never vote. They hadn't got the brains, they weren't competent, they were second-class citizens. The young men in my office, older than I was, if they heard in the street in Westminster, votes women, they go to the window and laugh their heads off. Silly lot of women. And then when they did something that was a nuisance, like smashing windows, and they were cross with them, but they still didn't take them seriously. They thought they were just a nuisance. I think the day that Emily Davison, you know, went under a horse at the Derby, I'm quite certain that both my parents were more interested in the horse than Emily Davison, because my mother came from a horsey family and she was very fond of horses. I'm quite certain people were very, very upset about the horse. I don't know what happened to it. My parents were more concerned, but the jockey as well, because my mother knew something about jockeys, but she came from a family that liked horses. She liked horses. Been put on horses when she was little. And her brothers liked horses. They were mounted. And she was much more concerned, I'm so sure, about the horse.
Did your parents actually argue about woman suffrage much at all?
Oh, no.
Because you said your father laughed a lot. He thought it highly ridiculous.
Oh, dear, these silly women, they're at it again. This sort of thing.
But your mother agreed with them, so didn't they have arguments about it somehow?
No.
I mean,
no, not that sort of argument at all. No. No.
But he would laugh, would he? I mean, you say not given to overmuch laughter, would wax hilarious, the idea. I mean, he...
the idea that women should have a vote, and he'd got a wife who was the main breadwinner, and yet he thought it was funny that women should want to vote. This was the masculine attitude at the time.
I don't know, how did your mother cope, in fact, with this job and bringing you up?
Well, because you can do an awful lot when you're young, and we're an energetic family, and she did it sensibly. I mean, she didn't try and do all her housework and her washing or anything like that. I mean, the washing and things like that went to the laundry. And like her mother, she was a superb cook. And weekends we had everything cooked, and we had to, during the week, had to make do or manage somehow. But see, it's very long hours before the war.
Absolutely.
It was 9 to 6, I think, when she went to the AA, but... when she worked for Tucks, who were a Jewish firm, in Moorgate, it was 9 to 7.
And Saturdays, as you say.
And Saturdays, yes. Mm. Because Adolf Tuck didn't work on Saturday. He looked in to say, how do you do? He was an Orthodox Jew. And I remember him saying to her once, he was awfully busy, said, do you want me to work on Sunday? He said, no. He said, I don't work on my Sunday. You're not working on yours. It's true.
Mm.
On the other hand, I knew the old man because he was very good to us, Adolf Tuck. We ever went down there, we came away with piles of books, children's books.
Did you?
Well, Jews do like children, this is very definite. Mm. And if she worked overtime, he didn't pay her for overtime, he sent her out for a great big meal. Because he knew, I think probably, that if he paid her, she'd have a sandwich.
Mm, and bring money home.
Yes.
Mm.
Uh-huh. Mm. They're very different because, you see, we were, at those times, everybody at the end of the week had no more money left. Wages were very low everywhere. Nobody had money left at the end of a week. And the 1418 war changed all that because women were more or less freed, those who'd stayed home, you see.
Yes, what effect did the war have on your mother's situation?
None at all. She just carried on working.
Did she?
Mm. The only thing is, my sister and I were out in business then. We had a young brother then, and he had to start school. And the only thing was that my sister and I stayed out late and did more of the things we liked.
You mean there was less restriction on women?
Yeah, well, we were grown up then, you see.
Oh, I see, yes.
We were also grown up. And every evening I spent on war work. I didn't get home till the small hours. You see, you had much more energy, at least I had.
Mm.
And she had a lot of energy too.
Mm.
She coped. And she was actually, you'll see that picture out there, it's supposed to be my mother. It actually doesn't get the expression, but it's more or less. And I remember the clothes she was wearing. And she was very good looking and she was very attractive.
Mm.
I don't think she was ever paid anywhere the kind of money that she should have had for the job. Not like she'd got today.
Mm. Well, she would have been a very high-powered secretary, I suppose, today, or she would have gone to university, I suppose, wouldn't she?
Well,
now?
I think with the education she'd had, all private, of course, in those days, and bilingual, absolutely bilingual in French.
Was she?
Oh, yes. Well, she was over there from 12 to about 16.
Mm.
The nuns there, no breakfast if you don't speak French. Yes, she would have gone to university at about 17 plus today, undoubtedly, and probably been an MA, because the one thing she was keen on was the English language. And she did speak what was known as King's English in those days. And any time we came home with slang, we were corrected all the time. We had a shocking time. Even my brother now is a lot younger than I am. He said he was made to read. He was made to read. We didn't need any encouragement, actually. We used to read a lot. And if ever he dropped an H, he was pulled up straight away.
Was he really?
Oh, yes. Mm. James, you've dropped something. Which wouldn't have it.
Yes. Do you think she had social ambitions? I mean, did she want to move up, do you think, in society? Maybe she'd never really thought of things like that.
In society, she had no time for moving up anywhere, but she had a lot of friends, influential friends, friends with money, friends of all nationalities, and she was highly respected. But she wanted to go into the social world. No, she had no time.
Mm.
Nor money.
Mm. What about her politics, Miss Alberts? Did she vote Labour then, or Conservative or Liberal?
Conservative as a family.
I see.
Both sides right the way through, yes.
Mm. Mm.
Oh, yes.
Because the Mrs.
Father both, and all the family Conservatives, died in the war.
Were they?
Oh, I am as well. Yes. I'm not Labour.
Yes, I'm not saying you should be. I'm just asking, you know, whether you see that there are
Main, apart from the foreign ones, like the abbeys, the artists, belong to the Zionist movement.
Did they?
Mm.
Mm. Mm. She was never sort of tempted into the Jewish community at all. I mean,
no.
I suppose people aren't they?
Oh, no, she was Catholic.
Yes.
You're born a Catholic, you die one.
Yes. The same with Jews, really, on the whole. Yes, yes. Yes, that's very interesting. So anyway, she just used to go off to odd meetings now and again, did she?
I mean, when she had the time, yes. And she used to listen. She She met a lot of very brainy women, there's no doubt about it. But she hadn't all that much time. She hadn't got time if she wanted to be militant and stand on the orange box.
No. What did she say about Mrs. Pankhurst and the militants?
I'm trying to remember. Mm. You got these awful long skirts at the time, dragging in the mud, and everybody had long hair and pins in the hair, and you had these enormous great hats, and with the marching and being pushed around, the hats got like that, the pins came out of the hair was dragging down. They looked horrible. It didn't look glamorous at all.
That's one reason why people laughed at them, you think?
Probably, yeah. And you see, voices, very, very shrill. You'd hear them when you were in the office, screeching out votes for women, and go to the window and you'd see them marching by, because I was in Westminster.
This was in your first job as a typist, was it?
Yes.
Yes, and you used to go out and look at them?
At the window, yes.
Mm.
And then if you're in the street, you stopped and looked at them. The policemen gave them a rough time too, you know, they get pushed around.
Mm. Mm.
And this particular friend of mine, she was 10 years older, Miss Bickerton, what I remember most about it is they had such a lot of fun. They really enjoyed it, and it was... They had fun. Also, she had a terrific sense of humour, and she saw the funny side of everything that happened. She used to spend all her time... She died when she was in the... about 70. But she never lost this. She was always interested in politics. And when we landed on a troop ship in Sydney, the first thing she did was to find a prominent woman in Sydney, Dr. Mary Booth, to make sure that we got on the voting list as soon as possible. We got on it too. And she was thrilled to bits.
You see, that's...
I just thought it was having a jolly good time. But some of those who were silly enough to go on hunger strike and get forcibly fed and make themselves markers didn't have a very nice time.
Yeah, you bet. Yes, yes.
They had them around.
Yes, and when they were marching through the street, these subjects, what was the attitude of the passers-by to them, do you think? I mean, did they shout at them or what? I mean,
well, some were silent. Myself, I just looked and was silent. I wasn't thrilled about them at all. A lot of them shouted that and made catcalls, and a lot of them laughed. This is the thing that sticks in my memory, that people laughed at them. They had to get over that somehow.
Mm. A lot of ridicule and sort of...
Yeah, a lot of ridicule,
sort of,
yeah.
Back chat sort of thing, yes.
And they did not look attractive, not as I remember them.
Mm.
Well, in any case, Christabel Pankhurst wasn't very good looking, was she?
No, she wasn't really, no. She was a striking personality, but
yeah,
not,
but she wasn't
not
very
particularly
good looking.
No,
she did awful cartwheels of hats, and a policeman only got to say, go along like that, and you would have the hair like that, the hat like that, and the hair down, and the hairpins all over the place.
Yes, that's interesting.
Well, when I joined up in a voluntary thing when the war started, we were supposed to be very daring. Our skirts were 12 inches from the ground. This was very daring. They'd never been seen that short.
Mm. So your ankles were actually visible.
Yes. There's someone coming to my gate.
No, not at all.
Well, you see, they used to chalk. They'd go by all the offices. I worked in Caxton House, that's in Tothill Street, Westminster. At the time, the motor union was absorbed by the AA, and I was first of all in Westminster before going up to Fenham House till they phased that out. And you'd come out of Caxton House, and in chalk was written in very large letters like this, right along till you got to Westminster Abbey, votes for women. By the time they got to Westminster Abbey, if a policeman saw them, he chased them, you see.
If he saw them chalking, you
yes.
mean?
Yes,
yes. And they just went along the pavements and chalked it?
Chalked it everywhere, yes.
Did they? I see. Yes. What, just votes for women with a time of a meeting or something?
No, just votes for women.
I see. Yeah.
In white chalk.
Yes.
That's all.
You actually saw them doing this, did you? I mean...
You could see them doing it. Mm. And also you came out and you found it was there as well.
Mm.
I mean, in the lunchtime you might see them quietly doing it and then they saw the policeman, they were off.
Because it must have been a difficult thing for a woman to do at that time, a well-educated woman anyway, to do that in the street.
Well, you see, this is the point I'm trying to make, really, that somehow Mrs. Pankhurst put her intellectuals in the top job, and she got the younger rabble, as it were, to do the dirty work, like Bickerton, was young, and she used to spend nights on roofs to interrupt meetings.
You mentioned that in your letter.
The young and athletic, and they were trained to speak, but they were more kind of tub-thumping kind than the ladies.
Mm. So you say these shrill voices, I suppose they were shrill because they were nervous, partly, weren't they?
Women in the street yelling out against traffic, their voices are shrill, aren't they?
Hmm.
I mean, they've got loudspeakers today, haven't they?
Well, that's also true, of course. Yeah. That's another difference, isn't it? Yeah. I think, yes.
I mean, you get a woman who's not used to shouting, I mean, the voices must be shrill.
Hmm.
You get high notes.
Hmm. And that makes them even more ridiculous to passers-by.
Well, it does, to people who are not in sympathy with the movement.
Mm, mm. You were never tempted to join at all?
Well, no, because I was 18 when the war started.
Oh, so you were a bit young then.
I mean, when I started work, 16 and a half, my mother was still working, and I used to walk from Westminster to Piccadilly Circus up Regent Street, up the Duke of York steps, and we all went home together. I didn't even go home alone, but we did start off in the morning alone because we used to walk to the station, my sister and I, but my mother used to come on the tram.
Mm. Of course, it was a time. Tell me about Beatrice Margaret Bickerton. How did you first meet her then?
Well, I met her at the war's end. Because she stopped doing suffragette things, the war stopped that. And her voluntary work, she actually was a bookkeeper, and she worked in, I think, Gosling's, the wholesale butchers. She had a very ordinary education. She left school at 14, but the education was such in those days that she could go anywhere. And she did voluntary work with an organisation called the Green Cross, the horrible khaki uniform, and the job she did in it
in
most
the war,
of the time,
you mean? Yes,
was showing round overseas soldiers on leave. She could be seen going, she was a Londoner, she knew her London inside out, and she could be seen going any spare time she'd got, weekends, taking enormous parties of Australians, showing them the sights of London.
Mm-hmm.
And about in 1919, you see, you won't remember this, the Australians that had been in the Middle East came back. The Anzacs, what was left of the Anzac, they had an A on the shoulder, those that were at Anzac, Gallipoli, they all came back because the light horse came back, they're mainly light horse. Because you've got, there's a picture, I think, in one of the museums of Allenby leading the light horse, either...
I see, so you met her via the canteen that was organised for these visitors, really.
Yes.
Oh, yes,
and we had dances and made sure they all had cups of tea, and eventually, because they all went back, eventually we decided we had a chance to go on a troop ship to Australia, so we went in July 1919.
Just for fun, or...?
No, we thought we'd like to settle in Australia, see what it was like. I was there 4 years.
Where?
She was there... Oh, a long time. She didn't come back for years. Well, she was a bad sailor. She was afraid to come back.
I see, yes.
She didn't fly in those days, and she was afraid to come back, and she eventually got on a ship and she swore she'd never go on another one. She was a horrible sailor.
Mm.
And she was tremendous fun.
Was she really? Yes.
She was tremendous
Tell
fun.
Me about her, what sort of person she was, because I haven't come across her at all in the movement. She was presumably fairly low down.
She's an ordinary member.
Yes.
She wasn't anyone who...
Not a leading
no,
figure.
No, she wasn't a leader at all. She was the rank and file, and I would say she did the rough stuff.
I mean, they're just as interesting to me, see, as Mrs. Pankhurst is, in
because,
a way.
People like her, we engage on the rough stuff and get knocked about. But then, being young, she could run and get out of a difficult situation.
Mm.
And at one time, I think, they made a mistake, the police. They came to arrest her on warrant, but they found they'd made a mistake, which was just as well for her. Her father was a London bobby.
Mm.
But she could get out of any difficult situation, and she loved politics. And I mean, after life, she got me at one meeting. She would go to political meetings, and I swore I'd never go to another, because Billy Hughes was to speak, and he was that very deaf old humbug, the Australian Premier during the war. And I thought, we'll get in first. Well, I thought I'd be killed because of the crush of the Australian crowd behind me, because I was by the door, and they were all pushing, and the doors weren't open. And I said, you'll never get me into this again, but she did just once, and then I finished. Because when she came back long years after, remember the time Oswald Mosley was being a nuisance?
Yes.
She said, oosh, I would love to go to his big meeting at the Olympic. I'm sure he's the coming man. I said, rubbish. But I said, I know I can get tickets. I got them. It was a shocking experience because again we got in the front.
You went to the Olympic meeting, did you? Was that in 1934?
That was the one.
Oh, yeah.
And in the front, young of course, had to be in the front. And he'd got, like that, a length of black shirts with linked arms to keep the crowd from him. And the crowd at the back was pushing me. I was going along the chest like this, and the black shirts, which were like cast iron, pushing from the back, was a terrifying experience. And we got in, and I've never seen anything like it, because they stopped this after that meeting. It was shocking, because they got lady black shirts bumping the ladies, and they got the men bumping men. And anybody who heckled or said anything they didn't like, somebody came along, frog marched them, bump, bump, bump out. Mm. I've never seen anything like it.
Mm.
Mm. I said, that's the last thing you'll get me into, because I said, I don't like crowds. But she loved them. You see, she was a Londoner, and I suppose from the time she started out working, she'd got interested in the suffragettes and the excitement. She loved it.
Did she actually join the fascist movement in the end? Or?
No, no. Oh, no. She was willing to look at anything to see what it was like and the excitement. Oh, no, no, she didn't.
What, was she a Labour supporter by that time or Conservative?
No, she was Conservative.
Was she? Yes, yes. Yeah. How did she get involved in the suffragette movement in the first place? Do you know? Did she ever tell you?
I'm trying to think. She was the kind of person who was into everything, you see, very lively. I don't know who recruited her into it, really. She must have met someone.
Mm. And she did she do anything, she presumably just did, as you say, the donkey work, in
yes.
a sense, of the movement. She didn't actually set fire to any houses or anything like that, did she? I mean, anything really militant.
Well, she did. She used to interrupt meetings. She was good at that, on the roof. And she used to stand on an orange box and give speeches and then run like blazes when the crowd turned on them.
Did she? Mm.
And I think she used to take a little hammer and smash windows and run.
Did she really?
Yeah.
Yes, I see. Because all this she told you, you didn't know her then, of course, did you? What was she like when you first met her then?
Well,
what did she look like?
Well, she was 10 years older than I was. She was in the early 30s and she was very slim. She wasn't particularly good looking, but she got personality. And she was a terrific sense of humour. She was a lot of fun.
And that attracted you as a young girl, did it?
Oh, yeah.
Mm.
We had tremendous fun, yeah.
Mm.
Well, she was a person who could always laugh. I mean, anyone who could laugh at being kicked around in the street, if you were militant, I wouldn't have been able to see the funny side of it, I'm afraid.
Well, you had to laugh, otherwise you'd give up,
yes,
wouldn't you?
Give up,
really,
yeah.
I think that's the thing, yes. Yes. So what was her later career? Then she spent a long time in Australia, did she? And then came back.
She went into the... she was in the catering business. She used to be a restaurant manageress. And when she came back, she... and the same thing here. She managed to get jobs here. She was with... I can't think of the name. Firm in Finchley. You are a Londoner. You know London,
yes.
Do you? Mm. There's a big restaurant, a big... store there and restaurant. I can't think of John Barnes.
Oh, John Barnes. Yes, I know. Yes,
yes.
She worked in the work there.
Yes, she ran the restaurant. Yes.
Did she really?
Oh, yes. She was good at catering.
Because that was a big restaurant. I used to go there in the war myself.
Yeah, she used to. She'd come up the hard way, into the catering business, from being a bookkeeper and a wholesale butcher. She'd worked up the hard way. Another thing, she was a lad because she was working in Toowoomba in Queensland, where incidentally I've got 2 nephews now, and Amy Johnson was due. She'd stopped at Darwin and then had a reception there. At Toowoomba, the restaurant she was running was there to give the refreshments, and all the dignitaries were there to receive Amy Johnson. And you'll laugh at this. She was the only person who thought to herself, that the first thing Amy Johnson would want would be the ladies' toilet, and thereby saved Amy Johnson. Really did, because everybody else was with brass bands going to waft her away. And she said, would you like the ladies' room, and wafted her in the other direction. This is true. And she was a great deal of fun.
What did she end up doing then? I mean, when did she die?
Well, she retired, I think, mainly on health grounds. She died, I'm trying to think, she died in 1952. And it hadn't been well for a long time. She'd got an enlarged heart. And she'd got a crippled sister who phoned me up. I lived a long way away. They lived at the Taplow. And said, will you come down? She's unconscious. She's been had an attack or something during the night, and I can't, she's crippled. Said, the doctor's been, and we've got to get her in a nursing home. I'm not going to have her in the hospital. So the time I got down there, the doctor had been, and she was in the nursing home, and I went to see her there. She was unconscious. She didn't regain consciousness. She had a very bad heart attack, finished like that.
Mm. It's rather sad. It would have been nice if you could have spoken to her.
Well, she wasn't conscious anyway, so that she wouldn't have known who put her in the nursing home, nor who came to see her.
Mm.
She lived about 2 days.
Mm.
But she was an astounding person, because her family background was quite ordinary.
Yes, her father was a policeman. Do you know anything about her parents?
Yes, her father had been in the Guards before then, a sergeant, I think, and then automatically gone to the police. And her mother was a cook, and her mother had been born at the castle gates, somewhere, I think Hatherock Castle. They'd been that sort of family, had worked in the fields, very humble. And when she came to London, she met the policeman, which was the usual thing, and she got married. They were very, very respectable people. And in spite of such a humble beginning, they were entirely literate, and they spoke very nicely. And her sister was a parlour maid with the Carew Poles at Taplow, and she married the butler. And he, poor thing, he came back from the First World War. He was a mess. A shocking mess.
Who are the Carew Poles?
A big family.
Were they?
Yes, in Taplow, they're a very big family.
I see.
They're that sort of background, but she wasn't like any of the others. She stood out.
I see. She got on with her parents, didn't she?
Oh, yes,
I mean, there's no problem.
Well, her mother didn't like a lot of the things she did. Her father was dead then, didn't like her going to Australia, but at 30 years old, you don't dictate to someone.
No, of course not.
She tried to put her foot down, but of course it didn't work.
Yes. She never wrote any, she never left any documents behind, did she have any autobiography? It's rather pity, isn't it? I wish she had. Because the trouble is, so many of these things get destroyed, and you know.
No, she didn't leave anything behind at all.
Mm.
No.
There's no relative I could go and see and talk to about her. Or
well,
anything,
they wouldn't know what I know. I think her relatives live in Cornwall, and they were very disapproving anyway.
Were they really?
Oh, yes.
Why? Because of her political activities?
Well, she just didn't. She wasn't like the rest of the family.
Mm.
I mean, her sister was in service in the big house at Taplow, her brother-in-law.
Mm.
She just didn't belong.
Mm.
And her brother's wife had started work in domestic service at 13. She had nothing in common with them at all.
I see. Yet she was conservative in her political views.
Yes.
Yes.
And so her parents before her.
Yes. What did she do in the Second World War, Miss Alberts? Do you know? She was in the country by that time, wasn't
she? Well, she was at John Barnes.
Oh, I see. She stayed there all the time. Yeah.
And there came a time when she packed it in, and she really wasn't very well. She retired.
Because you see, I just really wondered what happened to her afterwards, because she was in the doing her typing in the war, wasn't she? And she carried on until she retired, did she?
And you're talking about the First World War,
yes.
Or she actually was she had to retire very suddenly because she was knocked down and broke her leg. And she never went back to full-time work after that. Because she was running one night in the dusk with some shopping on a Friday night, having been to the shop, and she didn't see a motorbike. And she fractured the neck of the femur. Now, today they pin them, it's nothing.
Mm.
But they didn't have it in those days, so that She was 6 months, stuck out in a plaster like this in the Royal Northern Hospital.
I see.
In the
yes.
neck of the femur. Mm. And she limped after that. So she didn't go back to full-time work after that.
I see. But she really worked as a full-time typist all the way through until she had the accident.
Full-time and then secretary, yes, she did.
Yes, yes, yes. And then she died sort of some time after that.
She died in 1942, just before Alamein.
Did she?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, could I just ask you about what was she interested in? Did she join the Women's Institute, for instance, Women's Guild, Pounds Women's
no.
Guild, or anything like that?
Pounds Women's Guild didn't form until it formed about 1928 or 9. I actually knew the person who started it up, Dame Alice Franklin.
Mm.
She started it up because for a fortnight she phoned me up and said, "You've got nothing to do, your ship's laid up. Would you like to help me for a fortnight? We're starting this and that," is how I knew. And she was Miss Alice Franklin, then, about 10 years older than I am, and she's dead now. So my mother didn't belong to that.
Mm. She just really, all her time was cut out, really, to...
She didn't particularly want to after working. She was glad to be home.
Mm.
I mean, if you're out working all day, I didn't join the Townswoman's Guild when I was working.
No, no.
I mean, you had no time. Well, you did, probably. I know.
Of course, I joined when we had the best.
Mm. I mean, you hadn't all that time to join things, really. Mm. Not the life I've led. It's been too busy.
Mm.
Certainly, she would rather have been home, not joining things.
Did she ever talk about Mrs. Fawcett or Mrs. Pankhurst? I mean, did she admire Mrs. Fawcett a lot, for instance?
I think she admired Mrs. Fawcett. Mm. I don't recollect her ever admiring Mrs. Pankhurst.
No. No, obviously disagreed with her tactics anyway.
Well, she didn't like the militant tactics.
No,
didn't like
no.
them at all.
No.
Did have. She was a founder member of the Worcestershire Association with a gentleman named Percy Park, who incidentally was Baldwin's shadow, Scotland Yard, and they formed this association. Worcestershire being a very snobbish county, in case you don't know. And she was their honorary secretary from the time she stopped going out to business until about 3 years before she died.
So she had a sort of part-time job
was,
in a way.
She did. Mm. She went down when she felt like it, which was about once a week in company. Someone took her.
What did it do, actually, Miss Sarbots?
It was a social affair. Every year they had a dinner and all the nobs came up from the county and had a big dinner in London.
And this was an organisation for Worcestershire people in London?
Yes, that's the idea, yes.
I see. Mm.
And when they had the annual do, everybody who was anybody in the county came up, this sort of thing. Very I dull, see. I've been to their dinners.
Of course, Baldwin was a Worcestershire man, wasn't
exactly,
he?
That's oh. why.
Yes.
And he came there, I shook hands with him, he got an awful flabby handshake.
Did he really? Yes. Interesting, yes. Yes.
Awful flabby handshake. I shook hands with him about a couple of times. I've seen him because the days that I'm talking about, you could see these people on the corner of Whitehall. I saw Baldwin with his dirty old pipe, used to see him passing, Ramsay MacDonald, Ishbel, his daughter, anybody at all, you could see them on that corner.
Mm.
Couldn't see them today. They've got a big guard around them, with them.
Tell me about the nights on the roof. She must have told you about that, did she?
Well, I don't appear indelicate, but the problem was how to spend the penny in the morning.
Yeah.
This was very difficult.
Yes.
They used to put them up on the roof to interrupt meetings, you see. And the young ones, this was, not the important ones. Those who could get up there and then run if a policeman came.
Mm.
So I've heard of her nights on the roof with their sandwiches and what fun they had up there.
Mm.
Mm. I might tell you, I wouldn't have liked to have done it. I wasn't that.
No, absolutely. I mean, how did she deal with that problem, actually?
Well, they had to deal with it. It was rough on the roof, that's all.
Yeah, because it's the thing one wouldn't think of, isn't it? Did she ever get caught at these meetings?
No, she managed to run.
Did she?
Yeah. Mm. But as I say, the police did call with a warrant one day, but then they found it was a mistake. The warrant was meant for someone else, which was just as well, because the father was a bobby.
Mm. You say he didn't like what she was doing?
He didn't approve, because he was an officer of the law, and he didn't approve of people breaking the law.
Mm.
But I think of the quiet, he went round the corner and had a good laugh.
Yeah. What was she doing in the Second World War? You say she died in 1942. What was she still at John Barnes all that time then?
She died in 1952.
52.
She was at John Barnes till about 3 years before she died. Then it was a bit much because she did have an enlarged heart. She packed up because she couldn't do it anymore. She was finished.
Mm. And she lived with her sister in Taplow.
She lived with her widowed sister in Taplow, yes.
Mm.
Mm. Civilised, yes.
Yes.
Lion's Tea Rooms, the JP, where I got my lovely steak and kidney pudding. And it was always the Lion's Corner House was a great place.
Yes.
And there was the Express Dairy Tea Rooms. And then in Oxford Street, there was a very good restaurant, Fleming's, very good food. You remember Fleming's?
Yeah.
And they did meet for a cup of tea, yes.
And they argued, you see, that this was, in a way, part of women's emancipation.
Yes,
they could
did.
Go
this
out
is very
to
true.
These places.
This is very true,
more.
Because they didn't congregate in pubs or anything like that. They really went into tea rooms. And they were comfortable, because you didn't have to line up a wretched cafeteria. You got a waitress.
Mm.
It was waitress service everywhere, wasn't it, for a very, very long time. And, well, even during the Second World War, at the time I was with the LCC, we all used to get together in a tea room and be waited on, perhaps half a dozen of us, all welfare officers, and sit and have a jolly good yarn, and also discuss various points of business.
I suppose that could be where your mother met some of the people, you know, in the suffrage movement and so on, having in a tea room. You know, I mean, I suppose when she was out in her office, she'd go out.
Yes, she'd go into
like
tea
that.
Rooms. Yes, she would go out for a quick lunch in a tea room. Yes, definitely.
Mm.
But she did know, as I've told you, a good many, not as influential, but also. In the Strand, there were three shops she had friends. These shops were Samuels, they were Jews, and they had three shops in the Strand, selling postcards and photography and this, that and the other, and they were her friends. Anybody went into those shops, everybody and anybody. She met a lot of people that way.
Mm. Mm. You mentioned that she... I had the impression she lost her faith, or did she abandon being a Catholic, or
no?
Oh
no,
she didn't. Mm.
Oh no, she didn't keep it up.
No,
I mean,
she didn't
you
go
can't.
Very often. You mean?
But you can't now. It's very convenient. You're mass in the evenings, but at those days, when you were the kind of work she did and the family as well, you couldn't be out at 7:30 on a Sunday morning hearing to early mass. They've got it in the evening now. They've made it dead easy.
Mm.
But once a Catholic, always a Catholic. No, she didn't abandon her religion at all.
I see.
It was a very...
Yes.
It was a
but you
a
weren't brought up a Catholic yourself?
No, I
yourself.
Wasn't. The old man wasn't one, you see, and I wasn't.
I see, yes.
In that respect, she could have been doomed to err, but this is one of the things that happens.
Mm. Mm.
Oh, no, she belonged to a Catholic family, there's no question about it. But I always emphasise this, they were English, because...
Yes, that's very... Your father carried on living for quite a long time, did he? I mean, after...
Oh, yes, my father died at 85 of cancer.
Did he really?
Mm.
Did he really? Goodness. So he your mother outlived him, did
no,
she?
No, my mother died first.
Oh, did she? I see, yes.
Yes.
Probably wore herself out.
No, she didn't. She didn't. She had cancer.
I see.
You see, I mean, her heart was sound. This is the trouble with cancer. Expensive, but you could sit yourself there and listen to the orchestra. That was the thing in those days, wasn't it?
In the Lands places.
In the Lands corner houses, yes. They always had a good orchestra, and this was the thing. Very smart, wasn't it, to go and have
very,
tea.
Very
Another place we used to like to have tea, not now, for goodness sake, is Selfridges. Because my friend from Brussels, poor Madame Mathieu, when she was training as a nurse, she was a starter and you should have met her, she always, when they had their day off, went there and spent all their money having tea and Selfridges and went back broke. Because nurses, the pay was shocking.
Mm.
It really was. You couldn't be a nurse in those days and train unless you had a private allowance. This was impossible.
Killing audience. Did you hear her speak, actually?
Oh, yes. Oh, she was a scream. And sometimes... You see, she wasn't very good at writing them, and sometimes I did them for her. She used to tell me what she wanted to say, and what she'd do sometimes, she'd get hold of a new word, and she honestly didn't know its meaning, nor how to pronounce it, and I used to squirm. One thing she used to do is, I want to reiterate, and I've got her on the side, it's not reiterate, it's reiterate. But she was better at talking to an uneducated audience. She was one of the soldiers, you see. The educated people did more important jobs.
Yes.
The intellectuals.
Yes. But what was she speaking on when you heard her do this then? It wasn't on women's things, was it?
No, it wasn't, because it was to tell of the suffragette experiences to wide-mouthed Australian women's audiences.
I see, yes.
Just where they'd got the boat anyway and didn't know what it was all about.
Mm. Mm, I see.
Well, there's nothing she liked better than standing up and...
But was she at all active in any movements, really, after the suffrage movement? Was that the last movement she joined?
Well, she did all her war work. That was a big movement. And then...
The Green Cross thing.
The Green Cross, yes. Yeah. Mm. And then she had a job in Australia always, and it was a hard job running restaurants and that sort of thing.
Mm.
I don't know that she... She was associated very, very intimately with Dr. Mary Booth in Sydney, a very quiet lady doctor who'd been in all sorts of women movements there.
Mm.
There was nothing to agitate for.
Mm.
There, you see. They didn't have a vote for years.
No, I wonder whether she got involved in political agitation.
No, she always loved politics. Mm. That's why she dragged me to political meetings.
Mm.
She liked to hear what everybody said, and she loved a rowdy meeting. But I didn't.